Morning of today's daf in Erechin is Chaf Hey. We started yesterday the seventh parak of the Masechta. Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow we'll finish the seventh parak of the Masechta. As I just mentioned, these dapim are short. These parakim are short. Dapim are not short. The parakim are short. And as a result of that, so we are going to be covering a lot of parakim over the next couple of days. Parakim 7, 8, 9 within a week. The seventh parak of the Masechta opened up the topic of Steachuza. You have an ancestral field, and what happens when you're makdish, when you consecrate an ancestral field, making it now the property of the Beis HaMikdash. So again, in Eretz Yisrael, everything is really on a lease basis. There's no real sale, although that's not true. That's coming up a couple of prakim for now. We're going to be talking about there is indefinite sales in Eretz Yisrael of property, but everything is really done on a lease basis because we know in Yovel, everything's coming back to the original owner. So when you have an ancestral field and you're makdish ancestral field, so that means that that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be having a lease on that property. So what happens to that property is that you're going to have an opportunity to redeem that property. And as we learned in yesterday's daf, so the redemption of that property is going to be at a fixed value. It's not going to be at market value. Regardless of what the actual value of the land is, you're going to be redeeming it at the fixed rate. The fixed rate is established in the Torah. We went through the Pesukim yesterday. It's in Parshas Bechukosai, Perich of Zayin of Sefer Vayikra. Starts pasuk tesvav tazayin, one of those two. So the pesukim over there outline and articulate very clearly that the fixed rate of the redemption is going to be 50 shkala maximum for a core of saorim. So a field with barley planted in it, and the Torah speaks in terms of the volume of barley. As far as the field is concerned, they were interested in its yield and how much it produces. So they always talk in terms of a land and how much it produces. It comes out to 75,000 square amas in terms of the size of the property, in terms of area. So you redeem it at 50 shkalim per core sa'orim. That is that's the rate. Now that's the maximum. Now what are we going to do in terms of prorating? Meaning if I'm not redeeming it immediately after the Yovel year, but I'm going to be redeeming it any time from the beginning of the cycle until the very end of the cycle. So what is it going to do? So it's going to prorate. So it's going to prorate into 49 years. Now, there, as we learned in yesterday's daf, you can get to the number 49 in one of two ways. One is that we can actually count the Yovel year, but we could subscribe to the sheet of Rabbi Huda, which is that the whole Yovel cycle is a 49-year cycle. Or two is that we don't count the Yovel year, and so therefore, if we're assuming that there's a 50-year cycle, but we're deducting the Yovel year itself, and we get to 49. So there are two ways to get to the number 49, but the number is 49. We're going to be dividing 50 by 49. 50 does not divide evenly into 49. Okay, that is something that even without the Gemara, we would have known that. The 50 goes into 49, so obviously one and change. So what is that change? So it's a pundayon. 48 pundayons make up a sela, make up a shekel. And so that means to say that if you're paying 49, so you're going to be giving one extra pundayon. We're going to be discussing that a little bit in the Gemara, not today, but nevertheless, it comes out now that it's one shekel, one pundayon prorated per year. That is going to be the redemption rate. And so as we learned in the course of yesterday's daf basically introduced us to the topic. We learned the Mishnah yesterday, the machlokus between Rav and Shmuel, what happens if you are makdish in the Yovel year itself. So all these topics we were discussing in the course of yesterday's daf. Tashma, we are now in Chavdal Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. So the Gemara, one more attempted proof. So the Velo Golin, Achar HaYovel Pachos Mishana. So one is not allowed to redeem after the Yovel with less than 1 year. Now, Bishlam Shmuel Logo Alin Achar Yovel Pachos Mishana. So according to Shmuel, so again, the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel is what happens if I'm Makdish a field in the Yovel year. So Rav's of the opinion that the field has Kedusha, and if you want to redeem it, it's going to be 50 shkalim. Shmuel says that it does not have Kedusha at all. And the Gemara since then has been going back and forth over this machlokus between Rav and Shmuel. And now the Gemara points out that the Braisa that says, Lo goal in achar hayovel, pachos mishana, that you can't be goal after yovel less than 1 year. So according to Shmuel, it makes sense. Lo goal in achar yovel, pachos mishana, la Rav, my achar yovel shana. But according to Rav, why are we talking about after yovel? According to Rav, you could be makdish the field in the Yovel year. So misfars achra yovel mamish, my achra yovel be'emsa yovel. So the Gemara says, no, achra yovel does not mean after the yovel, but it means specifically in the yovel. D'chol kama d'lomayel eshana, the Gemara says, look, the point is as follows. You're actually in the yovel year. And the point that we're making is that even though I'm in the Yovel year, as long as the year has not been concluded, it's still considered the Yovel year. So that's not deductive. So the Gemara says, my kamashmalan. So the Gemara says, well, interesting. So now you're telling me that if you're in the middle of any particular year, so that year does not get deducted from your redemption rate. The Gemara says, we knew that already. In fact, that's exactly what the Mishnah says. My kamashmalan, dein mechashrin chadashim memehektish ha behejikatani. The Mishnah articulates that point. So now it comes out now that the Mishnah is making 2 points, but they're not 2 points. It's really the same point. And so why would the Mishnah feel the need to repeat itself on making the same point twice? So matam kamar. So the Gemara says, okay, so we just have to read the Mishnah in a slightly different nuance. The Mishnah is actually supporting its own point. So matam kamar, matam lo goal and lacha yova pachas mishana. Why is it that a person should not redeem his field after Yovel less than a year? Meaning, and now the way Rav is understanding the Mishnah, it means you're still in the Yovel year. There's still some year left. So why should you not be redeeming it in that year? So the Gemara says, Mishim Deim Chashon Chadashim Em Mehektesh. It's because the Mishnah now is telling you you're under advisement. Meaning, if you redeem it this year, even though Yovel actually passed, meaning when I say Yovel, I mean Yom Kippur. The beginning of Yovel is actually passed. You're thinking to yourself right now, okay, so let me be Makdish the field now. Let me redeem it now, right? We've gone over the beginning of the Yovel year, like we're out of the maximum, and the Mishnah is telling us, no, you're not, because as long as you're still in the Yovel year, that is still now where you're going to be paying the maximum amount of 50 shkalim. Okay. Ein mechashrin chadashim tan rabban. The Gemara quotes the Brayso. Minayin shei mechashrin chadashim im mehektesh. And how do we know that this is so? That months don't count. Meaning that if you're in any given particular year, that year is still going to be on the hook in terms of a year in which you're going to have to redeem. And even if you're a month left in the year, you're still going to have to redeem that year. So months don't count in your favor. It's based on the years that are left. And year here is a unit. Shanim atamechashiv yatamechashiv chadashim. We only figure on years and not on months. So that means to say that even though it's not a full year that's left, but that's still a year. In other words, you're in that year in order of redeeming. So whatever year you're in, that counts as a full year. You're going to have to redeem that year. Now, what if it works in Beis Din's favor to not count the months? So what we learned in the Mishnah, I explained this at the tail end of yesterday's daf, is that if Beis Din opts not to use the months to their favor, they may absolutely do so. Hey Chidam, the Gemara says, how can that be? Meaning, how can months work? How can not counting months work in the favor of Beis Din? So the Gemara articulates an example. So let's say now we are in the 48th year, or to state it otherwise, we're a year and a half away from Yovel. So we're a year and a half away from Yovel. What did we learn yesterday's daf? What did we learn in the Mishnah yesterday? That anytime you're redeeming a land, anything less than 2 years from Yovel, so we no longer are redeeming at a prorated rate. We are now redeeming at the full 50 shkalim. That's what we learned in yesterday's daf. So the Gemara says, so we're a year and a half left. So now imagine, the owner, the conversation over here is really easy to follow. The owner says, okay, year and a half count that as 2 years. Meaning, because as we just learned, as long as you're in a year, that year still counts as a full year. So the owner says, okay, let's count that as 2 years, and so therefore I'm redeeming it at 2 shkalim and 2 pundayon. And Beis Din says, no. In other words, there aren't 2 years left. There's a year and a half left. And so we don't count that half year. So you're under 2 years, so you're redeeming at 50 shkalim. And so now the back and forth. The owner says, wait 1 second. If we were 3.5 years, you would have counted that half year as 4. And I would have had to redeem it at 4. Now you're going to tell me that a year and a half, so we're not counting it? And exactly the point. That the Chachamim say that's right. The Gizbar says that's absolutely correct. The Torah says v'chishav lo. Sometimes a calculation can go in favor of the Beis Hamikdash. Notably, the example that we're laying out right now. And so therefore, so v'chishav lo ha-kohen mikom makom. So this is an opportunity in which a calculation can be done in favor of Hektesh. And under a year and a half, as long as it's less than 2 years, even though normally we would count a half a year as a full year, if it's less than 2 years, a year and a half, so then you would have to redeem it at the full 50 shkalim. We're up to the new Mishnah on Chafei Amud Aleph. The Mishnah begins, Amakdish Adeo B'Shasa Yovel. So if you are Makdish Afield, now the wording of the Mishnah is B'Shasa Yovel. B'Shasa Yovel, Rashi says, means just in terms of eras that we're in. if we're in an era in which Yovel is noheg. You see the first Rashi in the Mishnah. Bizman sha Yovel noheg. Aval bizman sha ina Yovel noheg. Podosa b'shavyav kishar hegdeshos. Right? If Yovel is not noheg, so then redemption is going to be coming at a fair market value. This halacha that we're redeeming at a fixed value, and then depending on how many years are remaining, prorated based on that fixed value, that's only when Yovel is noheg. We'll talk more about it later in terms of when Yovel's noheg, when Yovel's not noheg, what exactly are the parameters that are needed, so what circumstances must occur in order for Yovel to take place. That's coming up later in the Masechta. We're going to be discussing a little bit later on. But in the meantime, however, if Yovel is in effect, so now, when you're Makdish a field, so the Mishnah goes on to say, Nosim b'zera chomer sorim chamishim shekel kesef. So you're going to be redeeming it at the fixed rate of 50 shekalim per chomer sorim, a core of barley. Hayusham nekaim amukim masar tfachim oslaim gavam masar tfachim. And now we're going to take a survey of the field. Now let's say in the field that we're surveying, so let's say the field over here, now again, the rate is based on productivity and the yield that the land produces. So let's say the land itself has got big rocks on it. Or the land has got, let me go in the correct order of the Mishnah. Hayusham nekaim amukim. So let's say it's got a big crevice in the land, which is 10 tfachim deep. Or it has rocks, gvom asar tfachim. That's 10 tfachim high. So in other words, in other areas of halacha, these heights and depths are affecting other areas of halacha. Like, for example, nezek. If I dig a pit, right, and an animal falls in. So in Baba Kama, we talk about the depth of the pit having to be 10 tfachim because that's the kind of impact necessary to kill an animal. Otherwise, we'll say that it wasn't your it was still your negligence, but it wasn't your negligence that killed the animal. So in other areas of halacha, 10 becomes significant vis-a-vis other factors. But here, the height of 10 tfachim, the depth of 10 tfachim, just simply means now that it can't be counted as part of this field. It's yours, meaning it's still part of your lease, or if it's an ancestral field, it's still part of your field, but vis-a-vis being makdish it, it's not considered part of the field. So, eina nimdadin imam. So the Mishnah says that it is not counted as part of the field for its redemptive value, which means to say that when figuring out how much I'm going to be paying in terms of redeeming this field, I was makdish this field, and by the way, it seems very clear from the Mishnah that the large rock and the large crevice also are going to go to the Beis HaMikdash as well. It's not excluded from the Hekdesh. It just simply means that when it comes time to redemption, we're going to be redeeming it at a separate rate. Now, what is that separate rate going to be? So I turn to Rashi. Rashi says, Einim dav dema vehein niftim b'shavyav. V'ashar lefi cheshman chamishim slam lebeis kor. So Rashi writes really clearly that what we're going to do with our big stones and our big holes in the ground is that we're going to be redeeming them at market value, not at fixed rate. The fixed rate value is going to be going to the field, which is plantable. These, the stones in the ditches, are not plantable. Now, the stones, understandably, are not plantable. You can't plant on a stone. In terms of the ditches, why can't we go into the ditch and plant in the ditch? The Gemara is going to ask that question. Pachos mikan nimdadim imam. Now, any time that the height and depth is less than 10 tfachim, so then it's counted as part of the field. The Gemara is going to explain why. Higdisha shtayim b'shal shanim lefnei ha-yovel. If I'm makdish the land either 2 to 3 years before Yovel, no sin, selam pundayam l'shana. So you give one selam pundayam per year. In other words, the Mishnah is prorating for us what it looks like prorated. It's a selam and pundayam per year. V'imamar harini no sin davar shana b'shana. Now let's say when it comes time to redemption, so you talk about, let's talk about an installment plan, right? I'm not going to be able to pay everything at once. Mm-hmm. So what I'll do is I'll pay a selam and pundayam per year. Okay, let's talk in those terms. And the Mishnah says, no, let's not talk in those terms. In other words, when it's time to redeem, you must have all the money up front. All the redemptive money must be available to you in order to redeem your land. So, and the Mishnah says, let me read that line again. So the Mishnah says that we do not listen to such a petition. Redemption must mean that you must have the full redemptive value on hand. Ela nosen es kulo ke'echad. Echad balim ve'echad kol adam. Now, who can redeem the land? So the Mishnah says, anyone who would like to can redeem the land. The original owner can redeem the land, or another person can redeem the land. Now, as will become evident, and we'll discuss more of this later in the Masechta, if another person comes and redeems the land, so he's not buying the land, meaning he's redeeming it, and he's going to get usage of it, but he's not the ancestral owner. So basically what he's doing with redeeming is he's just basically leasing it until the end, until the Yovel year. What happens in the Yovel year? So stay tuned. We're going to be discussing that later on. Meaning what happens when somebody other than the owner redeems the land? So we'll talk about exactly what's going to be happening to that land in the Yovel year. That's coming up later in the later in the Masechta.
When he wanted to pay an installment,
yeah,
he had in mind then to take possession of the field while he's paying in installment.
Yeah, yeah. No. He wanted the field now.
He wanted the field now.
And I'll pay over the course of time. So, what happens when the owner, the original owner, redeems the land? So then the land obviously is now going to go back to him. What difference is it going to make whether the owner redeems his land or somebody else does? Aside from the obvious, meaning who's going to be able to use it now? But ma bein balam lechol adam elisha balam nos nim chomesh v'chol adam ein nos nim chomesh. So the Mishnah tells us, and the truth of the matter is, it's shtetin the chomesh, meaning it's a beferish pasuk. That the difference between the owner redeeming it versus somebody else is that when the owner redeems it, not only is he going to have to be paying the shekel pundayon, but that plus 25%. He's going to have to add on a chomesh. Okay, and you've heard me say this before, I know, but it's the first time I'm saying it today. So that even though the Torah says chomesh means a fifth, but it comes out to be a fourth, because fractions of the Torah is after the addition, after you add on the fraction. So that means to say, and I'll give a simple example of $100. So if the Torah says a fifth, so we will calculate it like a fourth, meaning a quarter of 100 is 25. Add that 25 onto 100, that gets you to 125. What's a fifth of 125? Okay, gets us back to 100. Okay, so the Torah looks at fractions after it has been added on. So anyway, so it's a 25% add-on for the owner redeeming the property, as opposed to somebody else redeeming it. They're redeeming it at just a fixed rate with no surcharge. Okay. Why? Well, that's a funny question, being that the Torah says so. But but obviously it speaks to the idea, meaning the why is because the Torah says so. But it certainly speaks to the idea that there is more value, obviously, to its owner to redeem it than to somebody else. So, and the Torah recognizes that. But again, I'm not giving a reason why. The reason why is because the Torah says so. Okay. Tana, kor zera v'lo kor tvua. So the Bryce over here is going to be speaking about what we're measuring with this kor. Again, kor is a volume. It's not an area. So when measuring the kor, so it's kor zera v'lo kor tvua. So the kor is the seeds, not the full harvest. Meaning, because again, we're talking about yield and productivity. So we're not interested in the stalks. They're nice, but we're interested in the amount of barley it produces. Mapolos yad v'lo mapolos shvarim. And in terms of planting with hand and not planting with the oxen, what difference does it make? Rashi writes, mapolos yad shezorim b'yad v'lo mapolos shvarim shayu regilim lasi sakin maleim zera shel al hashvarim u'minukvim hasakin mitachtehem. Rashi talks about high-tech engineering back in the day. So what they would do is they would put the sacks of seeds on the animal, put a hole in the sack, and the animal would walk through. Okay, they talk about mass production. So nikavim rechavim umolchim osam al pi amacharisha v'azera nofel ugedola karka hamikabelas kor zera b'mapolas yad she'enu ava mikarka mikabelas kor zera b'mapolas zera shvarim shehi ava. And interesting, I'm not really sure, I'm not a farmer, so I don't understand, but somehow more is produced when planting by seeding by hand as opposed to going through the process of the ox. I can only guess why that is, but again, the idea is that we're looking at a core with maximum productivity. Tani Levi, lo va'ava v'lo medak ela beinuni. So when we're measuring the seeds, it's not the thick seeds, it's not the thin seeds, it's the average size seeds. Okay, so basically some details in terms of trying to come up with the volume of 30 sa'a of the barley seeds. Hayusham nekayim amukim. We're going now to the Gemara's discussion regarding our ditches and our stones, which are not part of the land for redemption. They're going to be redeemed separately, and as Rashi told us back in the Mishnah, when we redeem the land and we have these large ditches, these deep ditches that are more than 10 tefachim deep, or these high stones that are more than 10 tefachim high. So the way Rashi describes it, we're going to be redeeming it not at fixed rate, but at regular market value. The Gemara says, I don't understand. So the Gemara suggests, well, I don't understand. I was maktish the land, and it's never been open for discussion whether they're excluded from the hektesh. They're not excluded from the hektesh. They're part and parcel of the consecrated field. So now, why don't they just simply get redeemed at the same rate? Why are they treated differently? So the Gemara is going to make a suggestion which it immediately is going to reject. Well, maybe because it's less than the minimum size, which is a kor. Meaning, maybe the field needs to be a kor in order to be redeemed at this fixed rate. And the Gemara says that's not true. One might have entertained the idea that the only time that you are redeeming at fixed rate is only when you are makdish a field this size, the size of a kor. So how do I know that if I am makdish a field, which is a lesech, a half the size of a kor, and then the Gemara just goes over, you know, the next size smaller, and the next size smaller, all the way down to where it gets to chatzi tarkav. So in other words, it doesn't matter what the size of the field is. What we'll simply do is we'll prorate, meaning we now have the ratio. It's 50 shkalim per a kor of land. So therefore, if it's going to be a half a kor, so it's going to be 25 shkalim. And so once we have the number, so then we'll just adjust according to the size of the land. So tamalam sada mikamakom. So the Torah says sada, meaning it doesn't matter what the size of the field is. We'll just simply work with the ratio that the Torah gives us. So immediately the Gemara rejects. Well, you know, the big stone, it's smaller than a kor. So what? And the ditch is smaller than a kor. And again, so what? So the question on the table is, why not just simply say the stone and the ditch are going to be redeemed at the fixed rate value? Why not? So Amar Marukva, so the Gemara gives the answer. Amar Marukva Brachama Hacha Benekai Malay Mayim, the Lab Ben Ezra Ninu. So the ditch in question is not just a place where you have to go down into the ditch. If that were just the case, so good. You go down into the ditch and you plant in the ditch. We're talking about a scenario in which the ditch is filled with water and it now becomes it becomes unplantable. So Bnei Zrian Inu. Deganami Diktana, the Gemara says, look, I'm going to be Medayik. Do me the slime, because the Mishnah says that it compares it to a large stone. Now the large stone obviously is unplantable. So the ditch in question also is going to be unplantable. In other words, we're giving an ukimta in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about a case where the ditch is filled with water. Shmamina. Ihachi pachos mikan nami. So the Gemara says, okay, so then I don't understand the depth. Because we said in the Mishnah it has to be 10 tefachim deep. And if it's not 10 tefachim deep, so then it's counted as part of the land. But if the ukimta is filled with water, so then what difference does it make whether it's 10 tefachim deep or 9 tefachim deep? If it's unplantable, it's unplantable. So the Gemara says, Mikan nami hanu nagane da'ara mikru. Shidre da'ara mikru. So the Gemara says, well, when you have lands, you know, every land has an imperfection. There's no such thing as a perfectly flat land other than the state of Florida. But every land has imperfections. And so as a result of that, you know, every land is going to have a presumed bump and hole in them. And so therefore, when a bump or a hole is less than 10 tefachim in either direction, going up or going down, you just simply call that. The Gemara describes it as shidra da'ara. It's like the spine of the land. In other words, there are going to be bumps and ridges in the land. And there are going to be little ditches in the land. That's all considered natural parts of the land. You cannot separate that from the rest of the land. But once we have a stone that's 10 tefachim high, once we have a ditch that's 10 tefachim deep, and we'll add with the ukimta that's filled with water, so at that point in time now, it's going to be separate from the land. So again, by the way, included in the hektesh, but going to be redeemed not at the fixed rate, but going to be redeemed at market value.
So the person has to pay for the land of a kor, which is 50 shekel, and 49 shekel plus for those areas?
Again, at the prorated rate, yes.
Yeah, so right. It could be like 60 or 70.
Correct. Hikdishu shtayim u'shalosh. Tana rabban v'nigra amerikacha ach min hektesh. Now, In terms of subtracting the number of years till Yovel, so we're going to be subtracting the number of years from the time of Geula, meaning to give an illustration. Let's say I was Makdish Shalem with 40 years remaining till Yovel. So now that's the time I was Makdish Shalem, but I didn't redeem it until 30 years before Yovel. So now when I redeem it, Am I redeeming it at 40 or am I redeeming it at 30? And what we're going to learn, it's very simple and it's intuitive. I think we all would have guessed this. When I redeem it based on the number of years from the time of redemption, not the time when I was Makdish it, which makes sense. Meaning the base of Mikdash had 10 years of usage of that land. I don't have to pay for those years. Those years aren't my years for redemption. Those years belong to the base of Mikdash. What the base of Mikdash should be doing with those years that they have the land is that they should be making usage of the land. They should be leasing out the land or sharecropping the land. But in other words, but the land that during those 10 years belonged to the base of Mikdash, I don't redeem for those years. I only redeem for the years remaining from the time of redemption until Yovel. Again, it's intuitive, but that's what we're learning together right now. Tana Rabbana v'nigra me'erkecha af min hektesh. She'im achla hektesh shana u'shtayim. If hektesh enjoyed the land for a year or 2 years, inami lo achla ela shahaisa lafanav. And even if they didn't make usage of the land, even if the land just sat in front of them, still, no sin selam pundayon l'shana. You're going to give a selam upundayon for the years from Geula until Yovel, not from the years where you were Makdish. Rashi over here points out, the last Rashi before the Mishnah. Inami loachla, shalo zara bagiz bar klum. Velo hiskir l'shem adam, shahaisa lafan of biyad hektish. Lafan of biyad. Hektish menakis selam upundayon l'cholshan v'shana mi Yovel sha'avar ad shas pijon. That is not going to be counted towards the redemption, because again, that was the years in which Hektish could have made usage of the land, even if they didn't. The Imam Harini Nosein, Tanur Rabbana Minan Shim Amr Balam Harini Nosnim Davar Shana B'Shana Shein Shamam Lo Lahem. How do we know? How do we know that you can't pay in installments? Meaning, I want to redeem the land, but I don't have all the redemption money with me. 10 years remaining until the Yovel. I now have to redeem it at 10 slime and 10 pundayon. I don't have it all right now. So let's work with an installment plan. Right? In fact, I got a great idea. I'll pay a selam pundayon from here until Yovel. Right? Well, you're good with that? So Tamalomer v'chishev la'okon is a kesef. So the Torah says no. The Torah says that the Kohen has to calculate with him the money. Es ha-kesef. Ache kesef kulo ke'achad. So in other words, all the money has to be there and present at the time of Geula. And then, for reasons I don't really understand, the Gemara then just ends up repeating the last line of the Mishnah and doesn't comment on the last line of the Mishnah. Okay.
What if you can't pay?
Then you're not going to be able to redeem the land. Under if that person went under advisement, I would suggest he shouldn't have consecrated the land to begin with. Okay. Good. Okay, I'm not the best advisor, but like, you know what I mean? That's pretty good.
Why does the stranger have a priority?
He does not have priority. He just has a break in terms of having to pay. In fact, the Gizbar, right, the CFO of the Beis HaMikdash is going to want the owner to redeem it as opposed to anybody else. It's going to be more money for them.
Right.
Okay, the Mishnah starts off, Higdisha v'gala inu yotza miyado biyova. Okay. So now we are going to be discussing in this Mishnah what is the difference between you redeeming the land versus somebody other than you redeeming the land. If you redeem the land, they're talking about an ancestral field. So the land was ancestrally yours. You inherited from your father. Now you redeem the land. So what happens to this land when you redeem it? It stays by you. Meaning you have now returned it back to its ancestral owner, meaning you. And so therefore, ein yotza miyado b'yovel. It doesn't leave you in the Yovel year. Good. However, gala beno yotza l'aviv b'yovel. Not however. Wrong transition. Wrong conjunction. Okay, let me do that again. Let me do it better. And, there we go. And if your son redeems it, yotza l'aviv b'yovel. So your son redeems it and you're going to be enjoying the same benefit where it's going to come back to you. Meaning your son is considered an extension of you. It's as if you redeemed it if your son redeemed it. We're going to explain that in the Gemara. Gala acher o echad me'akrovim. So let's say somebody else redeems it, meaning not you. Or let's say another relative redeems it, not your son. And the gala miyado, yotze lekoanim biyovo. So here's what happens now in Yovo. You consecrated a field. Somebody other than you or your son redeemed it. In the Yovo year, the field now goes to the Kohanim. Now which Kohen? So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Now, gala echad min ha-kohanim. Let's say a Kohen himself is going to be redeeming this ancestral property, meaning not the owner, not the son of the owner, but some, a Kohen. Kohen's got a little bit of money, and he redeems the field. Va'ari tachas yado. And now it's in his hand. So now the Kohen can make the following argument, or at least he's going to try to make the following argument. I know what's going to happen in Yovel. This land in Yovel now is going to go to the Kohanim. Hey, wait 1 second. I'm a Kohen. So why don't we just, why don't we make this all easier? You know what's going to happen in Yovel? I'll keep it. Okay. Velo Yomar, don't, he can't say, Hovi hi yotze l'kohanim b'yovel. It's going to go to the Kohanim in Yovel. V'harei tachas yadi. And hey, I'm holding on to it right now. And hey, harei shali. I'm a Kohen, so therefore it belongs to me. Ela yotze mitachas yado mischalakas l'chol echav ha-kohanim. So that argument falls flat. It's not a valid argument. What happens in the Yovel year when someone other than the original owner or the son of the original owner redeems the land is that in Yovel, it is mischalekes l'chol echav ha-kohanim. It's divided amongst the Kohanim, period. Now again, which Kohanim? So we're going to be talking about that later on in terms of which Kohanim are going to be receiving it. I think I mentioned it yesterday. Yeah. The Kohanim working in the Mishmar on that Yom Kippur of that Yovel. Okay. Anyway, but I'm pretty sure we're going to be discussing in more detail later. Tanu Rabbanan, we are on the top of Chaf Hei Amud Beis. Tanu Rabbanan, Im Lo Yigal Asasada. So we are reading the Pasuk and then we're injecting the correct Pshat in the Pasuk. Right? That's Torah Shabbat Peh. So, Im Lo Yigal Asasada, if he does not redeem the field. And now the Gemara injects Baalim. That's talking about the owner. V'imachar Asasada. And if he sells the field. So now the Gemara injects the correct Pshat. Gizbar. The treasure of the Beis Hamikdash, leish acher, to another person, laacher v'lo leben, meaning to anyone other than he or his son. Meaning acher is telling us that it's going to be an outsider. So what we're saying now in terms of creating categories is that he's represented by himself or by his son. Anybody else, acher, that's going to be an outsider. The lachir v'lo ben. Atomer lachir v'lo ben. Oeinu lachir v'lo laach. So the Gemara says, okay. Now, in terms of establishing who represents you, so we're basically going to include one person. So if we're going to include one person, why not say that instead of it being your son, let's say let it be your brother, okay? And we know in other areas of halacha, so the brother can fill in the role of you. So it's not shlichus. It's just we're establishing who is most like the owner, like the principal. So kishuhu omer ish are ach amor. So the Gemara says, well, when the Torah says ish acher, so included in the ish is going to be even your brother, meaning as an outsider. Hamani mekayem acher v'lo leben. So when the Torah then goes on to say ish acher, another person, so in other words, the Torah is driving at the idea that there is somebody else who's on the inside, meaning your brother's on the outside. And obviously everyone else is also on the outside. But when the Torah then has to articulate and say the word acher, that means that there's somebody left on the inside other than you. So who's on the inside other than you? Your son. So acher v'lo leben. So here we have one of the most classic discussions throughout Shas, and that is that we have an inclusion and exclusion, meaning we know that somebody's in and somebody's out. So, as being considered the principal. So, who is in and who's out? So, we've already established. Your son, he's an insider. He's you. Your brother, he's an outsider. He's not you. Huh? Well, in other words, why don't we flip it around? Why don't we say that the insider is your brother? Why don't we say the outsider is your son? So, the Gemara is going to give the arguments. Mar ba'ani aben sheken kam tachas aviv. So, the son is going to be considered an insider because we know in areas of halacha, the son basically operates in lieu of the father. Two halachas specifically, for Yida and for Eved Ivri. The halachas of Yid and the halachas of Eved Ivri. Okay, let's start off. Yid. Yid is the following. If in the event a man is purchasing an Amma Ivriya for himself, so the purpose of the purchase is so that he or his son is to marry her. And that marriage is called Yid, meaning the marriage of an Amma Ivriya falls under the category of Yid. So the Torah says either the purchaser of the Amma Ivriya or the son of the purchaser. So you've seen that in the halacha of Yud, the son could basically take the place of the father. Eved Ivri. Let's say a man has an Eved Ivri working for him. Right? Decent translation would be an indentured servant. So in other words, but he's not a slave. In other words, he's a Jew. It just happens to be right now that he does not have and opt out on this contract. He's now contracted to work for you for 6 years. And now within the 6 years, so the owner dies. So now what happens? He goes to the son. And he works for the son until the conclusion, until the termination of those 6 years. So you see that in the halachas of Yud and Eved Ivri, you see the son takes the place of the father. So the Gemara says, Adarabba marba ani es ha'ach she'ken kam tachas aviv, le'yibum. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we all know, and we all would have guessed it, in terms of what now becomes an area in halacha where the brother takes the place of his brother, and that's going to be in Yibum. In other words, when a brother dies, when a man dies, so his brother now can step in and take over his place. Lahakim Shem Achav. So Klum Yesh Yibum Ela B'makum She'ein Ben, Hayesh Ben Ein Yibum. So the Gemara says, yeah, but Yibum, although you can make an argument in Yibum, actually you don't have to go anywhere else. Even within Yibum, we can absolutely break that argument. Because what is the halacha of Yibum? The halacha of Yibum is that if a man, before he dies, he has a child, so then the brother does not take his place. So you see in Yibum that the son supersedes the brother. So in fact, Yibum is a good example where the brother takes over for his brother. But at the very same time, even within Yibum, you see how the son is going to supersede the brother. Oh. So the Gemara says, so discussion now officially over. So you see that the insider is the son and the outsider is the brother. So the Gemara says, now v'tepekle dahacha tarti v'hacha chada. Now the Gemara says, even before we broke the argument of Yibum, the Gemara just wants to know, before we got to that step, why don't we just simply say it's 2-1? Meaning we're looking at indicators of who's an insider versus who's an outsider. So we had 2 for the son, the halacha of Yud and Eved Ivri, and we only had 1 for the brother Yibum. That's 2-1. Game over. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why the Gemara didn't say that. Mishum de Eved Ivri mahay pircha nami hu denafgalei. The Gemara says, no, because the halacha of Eved Ivri, the halacha of Eved Ivri was actually generated from the halacha of Yibum. Meaning that argument that we just articulated, that you see that the son takes primacy over the brother, because in the event that before he died he had a son, so then there's no mitzvah of Yibum, it's that very argument that got us to the halacha of Eved Ivri. We wouldn't know about Eved Ivri had it not been for that argument. So it's not really 2-1, because of the two, Eved Ivri was learnt from Yibum. So it's not really an independent argument. Okay, I'm sorry. Klum yesh Yibum ela b'makum she'ein ben. Okay, period. Okay, so what have we now established? I mean, the Mishnah established it, but we went through the arguments of the Gemara. So we now know that when it comes to the redemption of a consecrated field, an ancestral field, so when either the principal or the son of the principal is going to be redeeming the field, so it stays within the family. The son could take the place of the father vis-a-vis retaining the field within the family. If any outsider, an outsider would include anyone other than the principal and the son. If an outsider comes and redeems the field, so that means that that field now is going to be permanently lost from the family in the Yovel year. The land is going to go to the Kohanim.
A distant relative who would be like a natural inheritor could not do that?
No, I mean, the Gemara is very clear.
If it's 1-1, then let the son and the brother should be included.
But the argument of the Yibum is right, is a compelling argument.
It's only for Ekdesh, not for selling somebody else.
Correct. The sale. This parak is Hekdesh. Next parak, we'll talk about sale.
So the brother has to pay Chomish also?
The brother does not pay Chomish. The brother's Acher. The brother's an outsider. Only insiders pay a Chomish.
Why, I think why he's not concerned about collusion, like he sends his brother to buy it and he gets it from his brother.
He's not going to get it from his brother. I don't understand your question. He's not getting from the brother.
Or somebody else.
If somebody else redeems it, so he's not getting it back.
He cannot get it back.
Right. Right.
There's no collusion.
It's not going to work. Okay. By Rabba Baravua, Bas Moshe Tamid.
He cannot buy it back. He can buy it back.
From his brother.
From his brother. So if you buy it back from his brother, he doesn't pay the penalty.
I'm not sure you're right about that.
You get somebody else to buy it. No penalty. And
can we do me a favor? Let's scheme a little bit later. Okay. Okay. By Rabba Baravua, Vas Maushita Mutsadela Avia. So the Gemara wants to know: does the daughter now have this benefit of being an insider versus an outsider? Now, in other areas of halacha, obviously, so the daughter is going to be equivalent to a son. In other areas of halacha, the daughter is not equivalent to a son. So now the Gemara wants to know, where do we stand in this halacha? So the Gemara now weighs the various issues. So mukma. So the Gemara says, now we know by Yibum, it does not matter if the one before he dies either had a son or a daughter. There is no longer a mitzvah of Yibum. In other words, a son or a daughter will exempt the brother from doing the mitzvah of Yibum. Not just exempt him, meaning prohibit him from doing the mitzvah of Yibum, because now we're back to the erva of Eshesach. Fine. So we see there, son or daughter or equivalent. On the other hand, by Yerusha, we know that if a father has a son and a daughter, the son inherits and the daughter does not inherit. So you see that by when it comes to Yerusha, they're not equivalent. So what do we say regarding this halacha of pigeon? So Tashma, the Gemara says, well, let's see. Anyone is considered an outsider relative to the son. Anyone's considered an outsider relative to the son, that means everybody. Meaning there is no exclusion. Meaning the only one who is an insider is only the son and only the son. So the Gemara says that in this halacha, the daughter does not take the place of the father. By Rabbi Zera Isha, mimamid la sada ba'al. Mimamid la sada. So the Gemara now turns its attention to a woman and a property that she owns. Can her husband be considered an insider? Now, I know up until this point in time, we've only entertained the idea that a son can serve as an insider relative to the father. But as the Gemara is about to argue, maybe we could say that vis-a-vis a wife, her husband is considered an insider. So, ba mukim la sheken yorsha. Now, why? So, the Gemara gives a fantastic argument, succinct and fantastic. Look, why is it that when the son is taking the place of the father, vis-a-vis this halacha of being considered an insider? It's because the son stands to inherit this property. Meaning, really, what the son is, in terms of this property, is he's the next in line. He's going to inherit it. So the reason why we can view him as the current owner, even though he's not, is because we can just simply project into the future where what naturally happens is the father dies and then it passed on to the son. So he's going to stand to inherit it. Therefore, he's considered the owner vis-a-vis redeeming it and keeping it in the family. So if I take that argument now and I apply it to the husband and the wife, a husband inherits his wife. When a wife dies, a husband is going to inherit her assets. So since he stands to inherit it, so therefore the Gemara now makes a very cogent argument, so therefore he should be considered an insider vis-a-vis this halacha of being podem. Well, let's just keep to the basic point. The Gemara is discussing only those things which are going to be inherited by the husband. So Odilma ben Mokim Lashakenota Baraika ben Muchsak. So the Gemara says, or maybe no. Maybe even in Yerusha we can make a distinction between a son and a husband to his wife. When a son inherits the father's estate, the son inherits all the father's estate. Not only those assets that are in hand, not only current holdings, but also account receivables. Anything which the estate is going to be receiving, which is due to the estate, that also is going to be inherited by the son. When it comes to the husband inheriting his wife, so you only are going to be inheriting current holdings. You do not inherit any of the account receivables. And so therefore, it's different. It's not the same kind of Yerusha. Teku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. So the Gemara now entertains the following discussion. Let's say that you are makdish the land within 2 years before Yovel. Now, what do we know? As we've already said a couple of times since yesterday, since we started the Perek. So if you are going to be redeeming the land within 2 years, so you have to pay the maximum 50 shkalim. What the Gemara now wants to know is, maybe over here under these circumstances, you don't get the land back. So I'm like, my day tech. So the Gemara says, why would you think that? So the Gemara says, oh, I see what you're thinking. Here's how you read the Pasuk. You read the Pasuk of Nigra Merkecha, that there's going to be a deduction from the value, meaning only when the land is going to be prorated, so now that the field in Yovel is going to be your field. Oh, so you think that only when you're not paying the maximum 50 shkalim, but when you're paying the prorated rate based on the remaining years, then and only then you get the land back. Oh, but you think that if you're paying the maximum 50 shkalim, so then you don't get the land back? So the baskiron in, the la baskiron low, that's what you think? Adarabba, the Gemara says just the opposite. Im lo yigagal asada vayasada b'tseiso b'yovo. So the Torah says that when does the land leave you and your family? Only when you don't redeem it. In other words, it's very simple. Redemption is the only thing necessary in order to keep the land in the family. And as long as redemption, as long as it's redeemed, it doesn't matter what price you redeemed it at. Prorated, maximum price, it doesn't matter. As long as it is redeemed, it stays with you. So the Gemara quickly dismisses this question. The Gemara decisively concludes that it doesn't matter what you pay in terms of the redemption price. Even if there's no Giraon, you still are going to get the land back in Yovam. Ga'ala echad min ha-kohanim. Tan Rabban, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. L'kon tiyach huzasoma tamalam r'minan l'sada shiyotza l'kohanim b'yovam. How do I know that the land goes to the Kohanim in Yovam? V'ga'ala echad min ha-kohanim. And in a circumstance where, before Yovel came about, a Kohen redeemed the land. And again, the argument, I know we saw this in the Mishnah already. The Gemara is quoting a Braisa. What we gain from the Braisa is a Drasha. The Gemara, the Mishnah, did not give a Drasha. The Mishnah just simply gave the argument. But here the Braisa gives the Drasha. Minayin. Sorry, I lost my spot. Vidinhu. And here in the Braisa, the argument is even bolstered. Meaning, if I'm a Kohen who's able to acquire other people's properties, meaning other unredeemed properties are going to go to me, so then shouldn't my own property that I redeem myself, shouldn't that for sure go to me? So the Gemara says, no, that's not how it works. In other words, this is not considered his. What happens in the Yovel year is that this land now just is basically stripped from him. He no longer becomes the lessee of this land, but rather now it goes to the Kohanim, meaning it goes to the institution of Kohanim, and even though he's a Kohen, it doesn't matter, and it's going to be divided amongst the Kohanim, and he doesn't retain it for himself. Okay, Adkan. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the Mishnah. Let's just quickly recap. We finished off the sugya of the redemption value and prorating and the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel in terms of what happens if you're makdish in the Yovel year. So Rav says it does not; it has kedusha, and you pay 50. Shmuel said it does not have kedusha at all. The Gemara finished off that discussion. Sometimes the months are counted as part of the year. Sometimes months are not counted as part of the year. And really, it's always going to be in the favor of hekdesh. The Mishnah says that. The Mishnah tells us the fixed rate in terms of redemption. The Mishnah tells us that large ditches in the ground that are 10 tefachim deep and big stones in the ground that are 10 tefachim high are not going to be redeemed at the same rate of the rest of the field, being that, as we learned in the Gemara, you can't plant in such an area. And so therefore, they're still going to belong to Hekdesh, and they're still going to be redeemed, but not at the fixed rate value, but the way Rashi describes it, at the market value. The Gemara... the Mishnah tells us what happens when fields go either redeemed or unredeemed in the Yovel year, making a clear distinction between the owner redeeming it versus somebody else redeeming it. If the owner redeems it, so it stays within the family. If somebody else redeems it, so then in Yovel it's going to leave the family. What other differences are there between the owner redeeming it and somebody else redeeming it? The amount that you have to pay. If the owner redeems it, he's going to have to add a surcharge of 25%. Somebody else redeems it, so you just simply pay the fixed rate of Sela Upundayon. Who is considered the principal person to redeem it where it stays in the family? So we learned in the Mishnah, it's either going to be the principal or his son, and that's it. Everybody else is considered an outsider. If anybody else, even a family member, if anybody else were to redeem the land, so then in Yovel it goes to the Kohanim. And on the Amud Beis today, we had drushas and arguments in terms of how we see this point clearly, based on Psukim, based on arguments that are given, comparing it to other areas of halacha. Gemara entertained a couple of questions. Can a daughter be considered an insider vis-a-vis this particular halacha? The Gemara says no. Can a husband be considered an insider vis-a-vis his wife? And to that, the Gemara indicates no, because his Yerusha is not the same as the son Yerusha. And then finally, what if a Kohen is the one who redeems the land? He's an outsider. He's not the principal. And he redeems the land. Can he himself keep it in the Yovel year? And the answer the Gemara says flatly is no, because it goes to the institution of Kohanim, and so therefore even from him the land will be taken away.